until next time, thank you for listening.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Carthage College, providing graduate and accelerated certification programs in education to start or advance a career in teaching. More information is available online at carthage.edu/grad.
WGTD's Morning Show. Insightful questions put each week to the nation's top authors.
Those are great questions. It always makes for a better interview, for at least for the author, when the interviewer has actually read the book.
You're such a good interviewer. My gosh. You really made me think. You really read the book. Yeah.
No other interviewer has really gotten into that. You really brought out some really great points.
Greg Berg hosts the Morning Show weekdays after the 8 o'clock news, only on WGTD.
WGTD is an affiliate of Wisconsin Public Radio and NPR, a cultural asset and a community resource. WGTD is owned and operated by Gateway Technical College, with additional financial support from the Wisconsin Public Radio Association and local underwriters whose customers value public radio.
This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and our guest today is newly elected, I should say re-elected, I suppose, after a stretch of absence, is John Antaramian, our new mayor of Kenosha. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Well, welcome, and welcome back to the program. It's been nice to know you in the past years and to have you back on the air with us. So we're going to talk a lot about the past election and mainly about the future of the city of Kenosha. Mr. Mayor, how long have you been on the job now?
Well, close to 3 weeks.
Right. And we're recording this, by the way, a couple of days before broadcast. So if we miss an important story, it's not because we fell asleep. I'd like to start right in with maybe one of the biggest issues facing the community in the future. There are so many things to talk about, Mayor Antaramian, but the Chrysler site, to my way of thinking, as a longtime Kenosha resident, a native, I came back to live here 16 years ago. Whether we do the Chrysler site right or wrong seems to me to be sort of a make or break for the future of the center of our city.
It's actually a tremendous opportunity, but it is something that we have to make sure we do it right. You have 110 acres of land that's vacant, another 30 acres next to it, the old Bonnie Hames site. Now, the city doesn't own that piece, but you've got 140 acres in the central part of the city that is open. And how we redevelop that area will have a tremendous impact on the whole city. So we need to make sure that we do it right. We need to make sure we take our time and make sure it's done right. And so we're in that process now of, first off, getting it cleaned up. Now, everyone has seen the on 60th and 30th.
There's been a big fence up, and now part of that fence has come down.
Part of that fence is down because we've cleaned up about 10 acres of the property last year. There'll be some contracts moving forward now with the to the Common Council, dealing with first off grinding the concrete that's already been stockpiled there, because you've seen a huge amount of concrete there. So there'll be a contract coming on to grind it and remove that stone. At the same time, between this summer and next summer, my hope is that we will have the opportunity to remove the rest of the concrete and do the major cleanups on the site. So that'll be digging out hot spots that go down anywhere from a foot to 11 feet deep.
11 feet?
Right.
The contamination reached that depth during the many decades.
Yes, the contamination actually reached deeper than that in some areas. Once we get that done, there still is 11 acres of the site that we have to deal with. And that 11 acres, the pollution goes all the way down to the water table. So we're down 20 feet.
What part of the site is that, Mr.
Mayor? It's the old building 53 from all the guys and gals who worked at Chrysler will know that building. But it's really off 30th Avenue, where the old office building used to be, behind the building, that office building, is an 11-acre site that's going to be a major part of the cleanup that has to occur. So that'll, you know, we're going to do this in phases. So the first phase is going to be grinding of the concrete that's already been dug up. Next phase will be removal of the next layer of concrete and the removal of dirt down 11 feet in some areas. Now, you're not removing the whole site. It's just it's the hot spots throughout the site. And then the final stage will be dealing with the 20 feet down, and that will be dealing with using bugs, at least that's what they call them. It's basically chemicals that are injected into the soil down at the 20 feet level that eat the oil. And then once the oil is been eaten and there's not much oil or the type of material that's left down there is gone, the bugs die. And so it's a way of cleaning the site and using some of the natural materials in the soil and also feeding that with these chemicals that are added.
Are there concerns about contamination of the water table in that area?
Well, you have already material that sits on the water table there. And so that's what we're looking to try to remove. And that's why you can't dig it. I mean, you can't dig down 20 feet and try to remove this material. That's not going to work. And that's why we're looking at the other options that we are as to how to clean that site up.
That sounds like the last piece. Else it's going to be the longest lasting piece.
That is the last piece. Mm-hmm. And the length of time, you know, it will depend on how well this all works. Now, that's the concept that we're following. We've created monitoring wells and wells around the site so that nothing leaves the site. And that's one of the reasons it's taken us so long in doing part of this is that we had to put the wells in. So before you remove the concrete, because once you remove the concrete, the water gets into the soil, goes down, and moves material off the site.
Drainage could take it anywhere.
Right. And so what we've done is made sure that doesn't happen. And so that's why different monitoring wells have been placed. So as we get this site cleaned up, we'll then get the concrete removed, the hot spots removed. We'll put grass on the site, seed it. I'll start working then on that 11 acres that is going to be problematic because of the depth. But we, like I said, we have a plan, and I think that plan is a viable one that will work. We'll get that part of it cleaned up. And then once that's done, you're looking at a 110-acre site that can be used. Now, we're doing what's called the VPLE program.
What's that mean?
The VPLE program is a state program. It has heavier requirements on the cleanup of the site. But once the site is cleaned up, we then have the state guaranteeing the site so that as we develop the site, we no longer have risk on the site.
Well, the state assumes the liability for any further contamination if we follow the state's regulations.
Right, as long as we follow the state's regulations. It's much stricter, and it costs more money to do, but it's long-term, better way of doing it.
It makes it more attractive to have somebody coming in, if I understand you. Mm-hmm.
So that's the process we're now following. So that is the cleanup plan that we've got in place.
Now, where does the money come from, Mayor Antaramian, for these? You have several revenue sources for
this? We've got a number of different revenue sources that we've been able to accumulate. $10 million came from the federal government in the case of the bankruptcy. When the bankruptcy occurred, $15 million, which is remarkably low, was given to all the Chrysler sites for cleanup.
And that is remarkably low for all of the sites.
Right. Now, they changed that later on when they did GM, but Chrysler was the first one, and they did not put a lot of money into it. And so what ended up happening is, fortunately for us, some folks at the state, a young woman named Darcy Foss, kept tabs on what was going on with the bankruptcy. He got the state to intervene. She used the DNR attorneys, got the state to intervene. And in the end, because of her intervention, Kenosha got $10 million out of that 15.
So the Department of Natural Resources of the state of Wisconsin actually helped play a role.
Major role. Without them, this wouldn't have happened. Now, they got the money allocated, so it was targeted to Kenosha. Then the city, the previous administration, had to negotiate the deal.
Apply for the funds.
Actually negotiate the deal to get the property because the funds followed the property. So once that occurred, then we were able to tie into that $10 million. So we have that $10 million, which is now being spent down as we do some of the work. We also had a number of grants from the state that we applied for and received. And so there's a probably another $5 million plus in grants that we've gotten from the state and other federal agencies. So that gets us to around $15, $16 million. And the city has roughly $3 or $4 million that's tied up into the project so far. That should get us through a good percentage of the work that needs to be done. There's going to be some other costs. And won't know that until we get there. But these contracts are going out. We'll find out what the costs are for these. The first phase that I told you about, which was elimination of the concrete that's there, removal of the next layer of concrete, grinding and removal of that concrete, and the hot spot removals on the site.
Do you see any possibility of running out of money?
Well, the next question comes down to is once that's done, then we'll know where we are at for the last 11 acres. Now, there may be money left. There may not be. We'll find out at that point in time. But you have to do this in stages. There's not a fast. We've always thought that the project would probably cost about $25 million, and we've got $20 million put together so far. Now, it could be less than that, could be a little more than that, but that's still the kind of the number that we're looking at as to what it's going to cost to get the cleanup done.
Now, the bankruptcy and all the changes of the corporate structures, there's nobody left to sue for, is there?
No, because of the way this is set up with the bankruptcy, with what the federal government did, they eliminated our ability to go after literally anyone else. So we were able to get the $10 million, so at least we had that. They had some strange rules on us, though. Because people always say, well, why didn't you save the building that was there? And there's a cost to saving the building, number one, in the sense of maintaining it. And at the time, everyone has to remember the economy wasn't in the greatest shape as to what was going to be used. And it's quite a ways off the interstate for that building. But the other part of the problem, which is the major problem, was that had we kept the building, we'd lose the $10 million.
Oh.
And don't ask me why. It's a convoluted concept of what they did with the bankruptcy courts. But we had no – it was just this or that.
Those were very, very old buildings, not designed for modern use. And I think you and I have both seen other cities that have kept these old derelict buildings in the hope of attracting boutique businesses or what have you, where they sit for decades and decades and then attract even worse problems.
Yeah, though they did have one building that was the newer one that could have been used or reprogrammed. But the problem was is you didn't know when, how, and how long the recession was going to continue. And you lose the $10 million for the cleanup, which
that would have been catastrophic.
Didn't make a lot of sense.
Let me talk just for a moment. We're talking with Mayor John Antaramian, who's just finishing his third week as mayor, back after a long absence of your earlier terms.
8 years. Been
8 years absent. Now, that Bonnie Hame site,
yes.
I remember that. I'm old enough to remember Bonnie Hame. I'm 72 almost. I had a couple of uncles who lived with their families, raised their families right after World War II there. It's a wonderful piece of property. Every time we try to develop it, somebody says no, and I get to pay more property taxes because that land doesn't generate the income for the city that it ought to. What can be done about that? You can see that I'm emotional about Bonnie Hame because I think it's a big mistake to leave that fallow, and I can't understand why it's happened.
Well, I think part of the problem has been it was – and, you know, hindsight's always wonderful. You can always look back and say, I should have done this, I should have done that. Same with my administration, same with administrations before me. When Chrysler closed in 88, there was a great deal of land that was available that the city could have purchased from Chrysler for almost nothing. The city was concerned because in those days, and like I said, you have to be fair with when you look at these things and why people did what they did.
Right.
One of the reasons the city didn't want to take the property was because the environmental issues. And there were no real environmental laws at the time protecting cities.
I see.
And so everyone was afraid of taking properties that had any potential environmental, because the environmental stuff was just coming really in focus.
And after the long residential use of that property, it was used to park vehicles and trucks,
right,
and nobody knew what could have.
So there was, you know, the city had a concern, and so they let these properties go, and Chrysler sold them off, and sold them off fairly inexpensively to any developers who wanted to buy them. And so someone bought it. I think it was an attorney out of Cleveland who ended up owning it, and looked at it and said, you know, if I sit on it in 10 years, it's going to be worth a great deal of money. And so the projects that have been suggested, is you have a private owner of the property, and they've had to make their own decisions as to when they're going to do things and what. And then I think the economy tanked. all the other issues that occurred, so I think it's been sitting. I'm sure that the owner would probably want to get rid of it at some point in time at a reasonable price, but they've held it for a long, long time.
This probably is completely unfair, but as someone who doesn't live in that neighborhood, it seems to me like no matter what's proposed for Bonnie Haim, the neighborhood is going to be against it.
Yeah, I don't know that that's true. I think there have been issues with some of the when people try to shoehorn things into places. I mean, sometimes we make the mistake of just grabbing things because we want something to happen. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you have to say, does this make sense? And so I think that as we look at the whole neighborhood over there, we need to make sure we design and have things that make sense. An example at the Chrysler site, one of the things I want to see happen there is a research facility. We want to tie in, the UW, MSOE, Marquette, Carthage, Parkside, Gateway, actually the school district even, Northwestern, depending on what type of research we do, bring in the private sector industries that would then be the ones who would help operate and run this with the university system. So you create a facility.
Almost a research park.
It's basically a research park with incubator facilities around it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that'll only take part of the area. But it's those kind of things that then will spur off what's going to happen in other places on that site.
Those could have high-impact results.
Absolutely. And change the neighborhood in a sense in a very positive way that people will want to start living there, to own property there, to walk to work, that type of thing. There's just so many opportunities with that. But again, it's an idea at this point in time.
I was surprised that the idea of residential housing for service people was rejected when that was proposed for the neighborhood, and it seemed to me that it seemed to be so wrongheaded, but the people didn't want the idea of multifamily renters in the neighborhood. It just always confused me because they also complained about traffic with other developments, and of course anyone who's been around Kenosha long enough knows that there will never be traffic in that neighborhood like we used to have when there were three shifts at American Motors.
So, to me, complaining
about traffic in that neighborhood was a cover story for something else. I mean, I frankly thought it was racist that people didn't want Hispanics and blacks living in the neighborhood from the service people. Now, maybe that's totally unfair, but it just seems to me that no matter what is proposed for that neighborhood, the neighborhood will oppose it and the council people will log roll and support each other, and so nothing will ever get done there.
I think you're being a little harsh on that thing. I think that if a plan that comes in that makes sense, I believe you'll see councils and everything before. I'm not sure about the project you're talking about because that didn't.
That was a long time ago.
Okay. Because I don't recall that, at least not in the last number of years that I was there and since then. So I can't really speak to what that project was. But I think that when we look at this, we need to look at neighborhoods. We need to look at how we want to do some things in the neighborhood. We need to look at density of neighborhoods. We also need to look at where we want to increase density, because there are some places that we should be looking to increase density, other places where we should be lowering densities based on what's happening, what we want to see within neighborhoods. So I think there are a lot of issues that we're going to have to look at again.
Would the city be well advised to try to buy the Bonnie Haim property so it could be a contiguous parcel, or would that be nuts?
Actually, I don't see a reason to buy it at this point in time. I think that if we develop the Chrysler site, which is 110 acres, I think the Bonnie Haim site will spin off and develop itself.
Private development
will necessarily follow. Right. I don't think that we need to do that at this point in time.
Okay.
If you were to be able to pick up the property for what the person bought it for, which I think was $100,000 for 30 acres, I would probably suggest to the city that we should buy it from them. But my guess is that's not what he wants.
That won't happen again. My guest this morning is Mayor John Antaramian, a reelected mayor. He's been serving for just a few weeks. And Mayor Antaramian, it was quite a campaign for mayor with a lot of discussion of the city and decisions that have been made in the city and how well the city is doing. And I just like to talk about a couple of those issues because I'm not sure that we in the news media have really closed the gap on that information. In talking with the police chief recently, and I hope to talk with him on this program later, crime in this community has been really doing better over the years, and that the statistics that he has, which he supplies to the FBI, show that. you've been just on the job for a few weeks, I understand. But according to the briefings you've received from the police department, what's your outlook and how do you feel about where we are with respect to crime in the community?
Well, when you look at where crime was back, all the way back to 92, crime is down. You're seeing the, I think that the city has done a lot of the right things to deal with crime. There are things that we need to do more, and I think part of the problem is that we have pockets of areas where we have to target a little harder what we're doing and how we're doing it. And when I say target, I don't mean in the sense that law enforcement just. It has to be a whole concept of how you deal with things. That's part of one of the things I told people during the campaign. I can put beat patrols in and bicycle patrols and expand service in those areas, which we will do. But we also have to do other things to get at some of the other problems in the neighborhood. We need to make sure that we're doing inspections for housing to bring the houses up to code again. We need to make sure that we're looking at infrastructure, the roads and things that are in good shape, because that's what people look at when you want people to move into a neighborhood. They want to make sure that the infrastructure is in good shape. So we're looking at those type of things. You need to make sure there, and one of the things that we're doing, and I just had a meeting on this the other day and talked with the Mayor Bosman a little bit about it, because I know it's a special issue to him, and have started talking to staff to put together and continue working with a committee that's been put together at Lincoln Park. As to how we're going to do activities and different types of programs at Lincoln Park. Because what we need to make sure is that we have some activities, youth activities there. We also need some educational activities there. Even the old adage of a story reading type of program at the park. Those kind of things, I think, are very, very positive. So it's looking at tying the library, the police, the Boys and Girls Club, and all of those things together in the neighborhood, including looking at inspection and looking at the number of beat patrol type of things that are going on. All those things together need to be done. But a given example of infrastructure issues, I don't know if you remember this or not, but back probably 94, 95, do you remember how the streets from 65th Street to the schools were very, very long streets? They were all basically north-south streets, no east-west streets.
Yes.
Well, the city went in and cut in east-west streets and reduced the size of the blocks and actually created a better traffic flow, a better opportunity for law enforcement patrol. Those are little things that you can do that actually improve what happens in the neighborhood. There's some places that are on the north side of 63rd Street that need the same type of activity. So we need to take a look at how you create a positive atmosphere in the neighborhood. So when we look at neighborhoods and look at law enforcement, it is the need of law enforcement to do the things that they do well right now and being in the community and being seen. It's also a need for officers to be able to talk to the kids that are there so they're not afraid of the police. What you want is a relationship. And so part of what we're looking to do in Lincoln and other things is to get those relations, increase the relationships. Because we actually have a lot of relationships that are very good with the Neighborhood Watch and different types of programs that we've created. So those kind of things are also in place. So when you do all of that together, that's when we reduce crime. And I think that what you'll see is as we continue to do those type of things, we'll continue to work on reducing the crime in the community. But the statistics show, but you know, statistics are always great. It's one of those things that it shows that crime has dropped in the community. But if my neighborhood crime hasn't dropped, I have a crime issue.
That's right.
And so you have to look at that from that basis. And that's what we're trying to do. Yes, crime has dropped in the community. We've done a better job in a lot of ways. Can we do more? And can we be better? Yes. And that's what we're working on, including one little issue that is being worked on now, but it's going to take a little time. And that's an ordinance dealing with nuisance ordinance, dealing with people who, homes that have continuous problems with law enforcement. And so we're actually working on something to deal with that issue.
Well, it's very interesting to hear your holistic argument for dealing with issues of crime, because that, from what I understand from people in other communities, is what's working for them. And you're talking about the parks is very interesting. We used to have a very robust program of education and summer programs and activities for all age levels in the parks. I don't know what happened to that, but I mean, when I was a youngster and we were fighting the dinosaurs in Lake Michigan at that time, and there were even a couple dinosaurs in the Lincoln Park Lagoon. It was so long ago. But there was a full program for all age groups. There was, of course, activities. There were the baseball diamonds. I used to spend all day in Lincoln Park as a kid, and my mother didn't expect me to come home until it was time to eat, and we all felt perfectly safe. Do you want to talk a little bit more about how you would mobilize maybe the public museums and the library resources and maybe leverage other resources of the city? I think that makes a lot of sense to me to mobilize those resources and use them in this purpose.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we've been, what I've been talking with in putting this together, because it's like everything else. We need to have someone who's going to be in control. So there's a committee that's been put together, and I'm looking for the, in this case, the library and Alderman Marks, who's been involved in this, along with the Mayor Bosman, to take a lead more on these type of things, to focus on the Lincoln Park one. What I want to do is actually eventually set up a situation where I have a template that can be used in other parks. Because I think some this kind of a program expanded to five or six parks throughout the city, and including dealing with the West End, because I think sometimes we all people don't realize that you have large populations on the West End that need to be addressed in this type of thing. And setting up these programs, I think, are very good. So I'm looking at four or five parks eventually. You know, we'll start with one, which is Lincoln. Make sure we get it funded. Make sure we get it working. Find out what works and what doesn't work. And then look at a few other parks and slowly expand. Because you can't do these things quickly. I mean, financially, we can't do them quickly. I mean, the city tax base is set by the state. I can only expend so many funds. And so if I'm adding police, I'm adding fire and doing these other things, I have to do things in a common sense approach and do it a little bit at a time. And so we'll start with Lincoln because that's where we've started the project. And then what we'll do is expand to other parks over time.
We have so many issues, we could go on for hours, Mayor Antaramian, but I'd like to talk about the big picture for one moment, and that is the budget outlook for the city in the next round. Where do you see the budget going?
Well, the city has to deal with a number of issues. We've got the issue with the additional rescue squad that's been added. So the council has voted on to add more firefighters, so that's going to continue to move through. I'm going to be working with the union and the council to talk about maybe some slight modifications, in which case we can get the ambulance up sooner, not later. So that's going to be an issue that we need to talk about. But I think that there's a very rational way of doing that and will enable us to get people on over time, but also to get the ambulance system expanded quickly. So that's one of the things that will be an issue in the budget that we need to talk about. There's some issues with some of the fire stations, two of the fire stations that need to be reviewed. Station 5 has a number of issues, structural issues, and so we may move some things around to deal with that issue quickly because I think that's one of those areas that, again, I need to sit down with the council and talk with them a little bit ahead of time. But I think Station 5 is an issue that we need to address. And so there are things like that that need to be addressed in this coming budget as to how we're going to deal with things and how we're going to put them together. We're a little early on this because I'm just looking at things that right now that we need to review and address because they all have impacts on operations, on the cost of bringing more people on board. The police department is probably going to come in with a request of another officer that's targeted to some things. There's some issues with technology, which we need to look at and how we're going to handle some of those issues. So there's a whole bunch of a range of things that we're going to be looking at, including how we're going to deal with some of the issues, like I said, Lincoln Park and the costs that we need to start developing into these projects if we're going to make them work. So there's a number of things that we're going to have to deal with on an overall basis. And then you throw in economic development on top of that just for something else to do. So we've got a number of things on our plate. And it's just going to take time over the next number of months for us to start putting it together so we can sit down with the council, talk with them a little bit about where we're going and how we're going to get there on some of these projects.
I know that your vision includes not only the basic services, but also where this city is going to go in the future and laying the groundwork for that. And that certainly marked your first terms as mayor in Kenosha, is the vision thing that I think has distinguished you and the results of your administration. Now, speaking of vision, you might be getting cross-eyed over what's going on with Somers, or Somers, as some say, Paris, and what's going on the North I-94 development picture. Do you want to give us a little capsule of why this is so important and
sure.
where we stand? Since you were involved in this, you can come in with clean hands, maybe, and make sense of it and maybe get people together.
Yeah, I think one of the issues that we've, regrettably, I think things had kind of moved down the road so fast that people weren't able to slow it down. And that was too bad. It would have been nice if the Somers and Paris had just kind of put it on hold until we had a better chance to talk. Because what's happened now is you have all sorts of people jumping in with legal issues and referendums and everything else because of what has occurred.
Makes it even more complicated.
It does make it more complicated. The county exec did make a request to get everyone together, and I appreciate that. So we have had one meeting with everyone together just to chat. And we'll probably be looking at doing some more discussions as time goes on.
Would you like to characterize that meeting, Mr. Mayor?
It was a very good meeting, and I appreciate the county exec calling it together. And that's about as characteristic. You now have as much information as I'm willing to give you about that meeting.
All right.
but it's an issue that is important.
Why is
for the
it
city.
Important for the city?
And before I say why it's important, let me explain a little bit of how this all works.
Okay.
Because I think there's a concern out there of how the city annexes property. The city, for property to be annexed into the city, someone has to come in and make a request to annex into the city. The city can't just go out and say, I'm going to take your property. Someone has to come and approach the city and say, we want to annex into the city.
Okay, so that's the first misconception that people
have.
The city just doesn't come in and say, give me your land.
Right. It doesn't work that way.
Okay.
The city has created agreements with Pleasant Prairie, Somers, and Bristol. Now, to outline that and say they were all pleasant relationships that sat down and everyone was happy about doing it, that would probably be rather inaccurate. It was, in all those cases, a sit-down trying to negotiate and figure out what was going to happen. And everyone has their concerns as to how that happens and what they want to do. The state in the past, or not the past, but a while back, after some of these fights had been going on for so long, actually created a law that is very helpful. And when that law is used, it makes a lot of sense, because what it does, it forces everyone to the table. It creates a situation where you create a boundary agreement. There are two different laws that can be used to do this. One is the one that we've normally used, which creates a situation where you can set up a time frame for people to come into the city and literally make it so that, someone can have 30 years before they come into the city, unless they want to come in. So if someone wants to develop their land, they come into the city, they get sewer and water, they develop their property. In return, what happens is the city usually agrees that we'll provide sewer and water to other areas in the town at the time, because you can only annex property from a town, not from a village. So the city then says, okay, we'll allow you sewer and water in other areas outside of our control that you have, so you can create your own tax base. And you basically set up a deal like that. The city did that with Bristol and with Somers. Pleasant Prairie was different because that was before the law. So those type of situations occurred. And again, In the case of Bristol, it was a long-fought-out situation, which had three parties to it, which is a little different. Because I think people forget that Pleasant Prairie took a larger amount of Bristol than the city did. When you look at the land mass, I believe they've got a larger land mass that they took from Bristol than what the city took from Bristol. And when I say took, I'm talking about in the sense of the agreement, as to here's where the outlines were as to what the agreement is, not where anyone was forced to do something that was different. In the city's agreement, the folks have 30 years to come into the city. In the Bristol agreement, in the Summers agreement, it's the same thing. They have 30 years to come into the city. That boundary arrangement actually was negotiated prior to my being elected. That was done in 88, 87, somewhere in there, as to what the boundaries were actually going to be. The negotiations that the city had with Summers was done in a way that the property would come in after a period of time. In return, the city gave them some sewer and water in areas that they wanted it. And what the city asked is not to change the boundaries, just that there was a deadline, because it's very difficult when you have a house on one block that's in Summers and eight houses that are in the city, because the city taxpayer is picking up the cost of, because the garbage is not going to know which that house is. So anyway, long story short, that was covered. We took care of it and came up with an agreement. Now the situation with Summers and Paris, what Summers has done is cut a deal with Paris that creates a, and you can't describe it any other way, it's a boundary that's being created intentionally to stop the city from being able to expand west. That's what it is. And the town of Paris and the village of Summers sat down and negotiated an agreement, which they have a right to do. What they don't have is the ability that to require the city to give them sewer and water in those areas. And so that becomes what the issue is now. So it's going to be an issue of sewer and water into those areas, how that's done, and the ability of Summers to and Paris to stop the city from doing annexation, even if the people want to annex in the city. And that's part of the issue that they now face, is there's a group out there who is requesting a referendum because they're being forced into Summers. They're not being allowed to choose. They're just being forced into Summers, and that's where the issue comes.
Looks like this one won't be settled immediately.
Well, you know what? It's like everything else. It's you never know what's going to happen on these things. Sometimes once everyone gets calms down and they start looking at how we have to do some things, that there may be a solution to it. But, you know, I'm hopeful that conversation will continue to happen and we're able to work out an arrangement that works for everyone. But we're a little ways away.
I have a feeling that's going to keep you up at night for a while. Let's try some rapid-fire questions just to bring our listeners and me up to date. There was a lot of talk about the city having a lot of debt, and the Finance Yes. Committee held a special meeting and brought in someone to testify to the contrary. I thought that was a rather unusual step in the middle of a campaign. What's your analysis of the city's debt issues, if there are issues?
Well, I don't think there are issues. I mean, the city's debt has been planned. And literally, there's debt is separated into two parts. One part is every year the city borrows $10 million roughly. And that $10 million goes for fire trucks. It goes for fixing up fire stations, one of the things we just talked about. It goes for road repair. It goes for, you know, those type of activities that that are normally items that can be paid off in 10 years. Because what we do is we do a 10-year note. So every year you add $10 million, every year you take $10 million off. So it's a revolving.
It's revolving.
Right. So at literally you have $100 million in debt that you're always going to have, because if you're going to improve roads, you're going to do whatever you're going to do within your community. That's comes on and off. The second piece are TIF districts, tax incremental financing districts. And those are basically used for industrial parts, cleanup of environmental areas. Those dollars are long-term dollars that are usually 20 to 23 years is how they're set up, because you have cleanup. So Chrysler eventually will be a TIF district. Why? Because if we're going to redevelop it, it's going to take funds that we put in to redevelop the site and cover those costs. So those types of things are then set up. Now, those debts pay off over a period of time, and the city is in a situation right now where the first TIF district will come off in, I think, 2019. And so then there are other TIF districts that will eventually run their course and be done. But those are basically paid for. And what happens is when you have, like, TIF districts that deal with environmental issues, those TIF districts are difficult to pay off quickly. It's just difficult because you're paying a lot more money to get the cleanup done before you even do the development.
Much upfront cost.
Right. So what happens is the state law allows you to take money from like an industrial TIF or a green TIF to help pay off the cost of a TIF that isn't, that's been an environmental or a TIF that is blight elimination type of TIF, because those costs are higher than developing in a green spot, a green space. And so those, that's what the law allows to have happen. And so that's what the city has done in certain areas where we've had to spend a great deal of money on cleanups, that you can transfer money from one TIF to another. And that's how that works. And so those TIFs are separate, and those TIFs are paying themselves off as a group, and that's not been a problem. So and there is no debt.
And the debt rating of the community?
The debt rating of the community right now is at the highest level it's ever been, at least to my knowledge.
So we can drop that issue.
So to me, that's not an issue. But again, you know, that's something that someone can make into an issue if they want. It's just I don't see it, and I don't think our financial folks have seen it.
I spend a good deal of time at our public museums, and it was alleged during the mayoral campaign that the public museums are a quote-unquote failed asset. That doesn't seem to be what I observe. The statistics I heard is that we have extremely high attendance rate, and that there's a lot of earned income from those museums, and that the tourist dollars that they're bringing into the community are enormous. What are your official understandings of the public museum's contribution to the community, Mayor Antaramian?
Well, I think the museums have drawn thousands of people, hundreds of thousands of people to the community over the time that they've been built. I think they're a quality of life issue. I think if you're going to draw people and companies to your community, you have to have a quality of life. I think the museums play a great deal in that quality of life. We average about 250,000 people a year that hit all three museums. Make sure I get that, make sure everyone's clear on that. It's three museums, 250,000 people. Some people have said that that's low. When you look at the museums separately, they rank rather highly as tourist attractions from the state. So when the state looks at the numbers that come, I think we rank in, you know, the top 20 with all three museums as to different participation of people coming to see them. When you put them together as a campus, which is what we've done, I think we're like the fourth or fifth, and I may be wrong on that, but that's what sticks in my mind, the fourth or fifth largest draw in the state. So higher than a number of other major facilities throughout the state, we rank very high as to the number of people coming to our museums.
Sounds like a success to me.
I agree with you. I like everything else, so I suppose people will look at things from a different perspective, but I think when you look at the numbers and you look at the draw and you look at what it's done, I think it's been very successful.
Well, I meet people at the museums all the time from out of town, and they're spending money like crazy downtown, which is a good thing. A couple of quick ones, Mayor Antaramian. What's the status of the Dream Playgrounds surface? Special surface supposedly is not so safe anymore?
Right. There was an issue with the surface on the playground, and regrettably, we had to close the playground at this point in time. We're working with the contractor. Hopefully, we'll be able to resolve these issues without it being into a legal type of situation, but that's being worked on now, and hopefully that they can come to a resolution to fix it and or redo it, whatever needs to be done. We need to make sure it's done right, and then we will, so that when we reopen, it's not an issue, and it'll be smooth sailing for the future.
Well, that's not the only surface that's been an issue in the last few days. Also, the surface of the Velodrome, the bike track in Washington Bowl, there's some nasty cracks in it, according to some. The contractor says that the cracks are there because material expands and contracts, and if you don't put in enough expansion joints, so that's what you can expect, and the city can just not worry about it. What are you going to do?
Well, there again, we are in conversation with the contractor, because there are some voids that were created that need to be fixed. We need to take a look to see if those voids are the reason that the cracks occurred. And we just, this is one of those things, we'll talk through it, we'll find out what the rational solution is. We'll move forward with it, and we'll try to get these open as quickly as possible. But there is also the issue from the city's perspective that the city shouldn't be taking things if it's not our fault. So we need to look at that, and we will do that.
Great. Well, I want to thank you. Mayor John Antaramian has been our guest this morning on Community Matters. on serving a new term as mayor of the city of Kenosha. Thank you very much for being our guest today, Mayor Antaramian. For Community Matters, this is Len Iaquinta encouraging you to get informed and get involved. Good day.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning.